I'm Lillian Vasquez with Lifestyles on KVCR. Thanks for listening. In honor of Veterans Day this week, I'll speak with Ray Anderson, a veteran who served during the Vietnam era with the 82nd Airborne. Ray shares his story of how he joined the military, his experience serving as a newspaper reporter, and how 50 years later he returned to Vietnam with his son and a team of others to deliver 550 wheelchairs. A few years ago, when Ken Burns produced his film, The Vietnam War, for public television, I did a radio series regarding the soundtrack of the Vietnam War. In my radio series, I asked each vet, what music were they listening to during that era? Ray cited Bob Dylan.
Lay, lady, lay. Lay across my big brass bed.
And now, my conversation with Ray Anderson. Thank you for joining us for this Veterans Day show on Lifestyles.
Thank you.
I'd like to begin with your story as a young man about to serve with the 82nd Airborne. Where was home for you, and why did you decide to serve, or was it decided for you?
Let me begin by saying my father was an American soldier in Germany in World War II, and I was the product of that relationship. So my dad actually came over and got us from Germany, my mother, myself, and my stepbrother, when I was 4 years old, and brought me to the United States in 1951. From that point forward, I was raised in a little community in Upper Michigan called Escanaba, Michigan. As a sophomore in college, I was running track on the track team and was playing some basketball and stuff, and I didn't register for school that summer thinking that I'm on the track team. I don't have to. Well, within a matter of 3 weeks, I was given a draft notice, as you probably know, from that period in 1967. So rather than simply go the route of being drafted and have them choose my discipline for me, I actually went in and went to journalism school in the military.
Oh.
I'm sure you've heard of Good Morning Vietnam.
Good Morning Vietnam, sure.
Yeah. So they had a radio school, and I went because I was told I had a nice speaking voice in high school. So that's kind of what got me started on my career in the military.
What were your assigned duties? What did you ultimately end up doing?
You know, I spent a long time waiting at Fort Leonard, Missouri, because this required a top secret clearance. And it took them 10 months to complete the investigation. At that time, I was held at Fort Leonard, Missouri for almost 10 months because it needed a top secret clearance. And I was literally working as a drill instructor during that period to kind of help prepare troops for going to Vietnam. Then I finally went to school, ended up in Fort Dix, New Jersey, and then was transferred to Vietnam, where I was assigned to the 82nd Airborne as a newspaper reporter.
And once you got there, what happened?
Once I got there, I found that what I believed about the war in terms of its negatives and its influence on people was very true. In the first 4 months, I was doing my job. I was going out in the field and reporting for things. And I was injured, not in a battlefield incident, but in another incident which required that I had some surgery. And so when I returned from surgery, I was picking up my gear, and my supply sergeant said, well, we need to get your weapon. And I told him, I said, no, I don't want my weapon anymore. I didn't need it for my job, and I said, I'm not taking it anymore. It's not really necessary for me to do that. So needless to say, that caused a bit of a stir. My company commander said, well, you know, Ray, you've got to make a decision here or else I'm going to have to court-martial you. During that period, a syndicated columnist by the name of Tom Teedy was in country, and one of our responsibilities, not only what to write, but was to escort ABC, CBS, these syndicated columnists out to the field. You know, we could prepare people in advance. So obviously with me going along with him, you know, the first thing he noticed, he says, where's your weapon, son? And I said, I don't carry one. And he pulled out his notepad and basically started taking notes. And he left, and I just completely forgot about it. About 2 weeks later, I was approached by a major saying, Corporal Anderson, we need you to come to headquarters. And there were three other field grade officers, and they had this article, and they turned around and said, did you say this? And there was this article from this syndicated columnist saying that, you know, I was the latest challenge in terms of what was going on in Vietnam. The upshot of all that Lillian, was that basically within 3 weeks I was given a conscientious objector status directly from the Pentagon, and I spent the balance of my 10 months in Vietnam, you know, not carrying a weapon and still serving in my capacity as a newspaper reporter for a variety of different articles and things that I did.
So I was a young girl, and I don't know to the degree that you served and how it was, but it was allowed for you to continue doing your job without carrying a weapon? That was approved?
That was approved. Because I was approved as a conscientious objector, I no longer had to carry a weapon because it was approved by the Pentagon. So I was able to continue to do my job, but I didn't have to carry a weapon anymore.
Hmm. And when you were writing for those next 10 months, what were you writing about?
I ended up in what was called the Third Field Headquarters, which was literally the area around Saigon, Long Binh, etc. And my job was to go out in the field and write articles. I did one on a university in the middle of Saigon. In fact, I went back and visited when I was there last year. I did an article on animal life. I did one on a variety of things. This is off the top of my head. But I was able to do articles kind of like National Geographic and other things, all of those tying back into the culture of Vietnam and what it meant and you know, how we were able to relate to it, sometimes in a good way and sometimes in a negative way.
And where did these articles appear?
It appeared in a magazine called The Hurricane, which is a product that was directly related to the people who lived in the Third Corps area. So every month they would distribute this to everybody from the generals on down to the front line.
And did you get any feedback on your articles from the generals on down, or was it just you weren't causing any riff? It was okay what you were writing about?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, these had to be approved by my commanders, et cetera. So everything that I wrote had to be consistent with what the expectations of the upper command were.
Let me reintroduce my guest is Ray Anderson. He served in the Vietnam War as a journalist. And did you leave after 10 months? Did you come back to the United States?
Yeah, after I finished my tour, at the time, if you had less than 5 months to go, and that's why I extended, because I wanted to get done, I was able to come back to the United States. And then once I got to the United States, I was able to get out of the military.
Now, your time there, obviously, if you were there for 10 months, you did see a bit of the country. If you were writing about different things that were going on, when you left the military, what was your feelings, emotions, or impression of your time serving?
One of the things I've often said, and actually I served 15 months, 10 months after I was told like I didn't have to carry a weapon. But one of the things that I've often told people, it was a really growing, valuable experience for me, but I wouldn't have wished it on anybody else. I mean, those of us who went to Vietnam, some of us were lucky. And the truth is there are only about 10% of any service that are actually in the front line. The rest of us are in support of that in some way or another. It transformed my life. It changed who I was. I got back and I was able to complete school in a matter of a year and a half after spending the first 2 years kind of having a good time. You know, so I was much more focused. I was aware that, you know, there was an opportunity to really make a difference in life, and I wanted to be a part of that, having seen kind of the ugly side of life. You know, wherever you go in battle, you see things that you wish you didn't have to, but that's the way it is.
So when you came back and you said you were more focused, you went to college, you got your degree in journalism?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I did.
And then what did you go on to do as your career?
Well, when I immediately, I ended up in North Carolina where I worked as the City Beat reporter for the Wilmington Star News in Wilmington, North Carolina. Actually, Michael Jordan was in high school there when I was working in the newspaper. And I really enjoyed my time there as a young man. I actually had a girlfriend in Vietnam, and she ended up in North Carolina. And a year later, she moved to San Francisco. And I followed her from there to San Francisco and then from there to Alaska, but not her. I went independently to Alaska. So I had an adventurous young life.
After a quick break, I'll continue my conversation with veteran Ray Anderson. You're listening to Lifestyles, and this is our tribute to all veterans. I'm Lillian Vasquez. We'll be right back. If you're just joining us, my guest is Ray Anderson. Ray is a veteran who served during the Vietnam era with the 82nd Airborne. Ray has shared his story of service in the military as a newspaper reporter. 50 years later, Ray and his son and a team of others returned to Vietnam with the sole intention to help others by providing 550 wheelchairs. Let's bring us up to more modern times. You decided to go back to Vietnam in 2019 with your son and a few others. Tell me about that excursion and that mission.
Well, let me explain a little bit. I've been involved with an organization called Free Wheelchair Mission for almost a decade now. And earlier, we had delivered 3,000 wheelchairs to people in Jamaica. We had a connection there. And so every year, we'd get a container of wheelchairs, which is 550 wheelchairs, and then go and distribute them to people who are in desperate need of them. Some of them we delivered personally, and some of them were delivered by church members after we were gone. Well, as I was getting closer to my 50-year reunion, I thought, well, I wonder if I can do this in Vietnam. And I learned that there have been over 100,000 wheelchairs delivered to Vietnam. So I reached out to an organization called Give It Back to the Kids, who was known to be delivering wheelchairs, and told them that I would like to see if I could raise enough money to be able to help a team of us, you know, get a container of wheelchairs and deliver them. So we raised that money, and there was a team of 10 of us, including my son, who ended up in Dan Hoa province, which is just west of Hanoi. So for the first time in my life, I was in North Vietnam. Mm. And every day we would leave from our hotel in Dan Hoa and move to different districts inside there and deliver wheelchairs to these people at different locations, etc. And at the same time, of course, we learned a lot about the culture, and we were escorted by government officials. And the thing that really touched my heart is that so many of these people had been in the military when I was there. Some of them were younger than I was, but, you know, there were some nearly my age. And it was amazing to me to be able to stand there and have these conversations with what had formerly been the enemy and be able to get to know them as people and understand, you know, we all have the same problems. And what I learned about Vietnam, I mean, the bottom line is that they were simply fighting for their freedom. You know, for more than 300 years, it's either been the Chinese, the Japanese, the French, the Americans, or whatever, that have been trying to control their country. And all they said is, just leave us alone. We want to be free. And so to be able to share that opportunity with some of these people who had literally fought against was extremely moving. And I was very grateful to have the experience, and also to help the people that had been either injured or born with conditions and be able to give them a wheelchair. It was a very moving experience.
I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about maybe those that have been injured or injured since then because of the stuff we left behind.
Yeah, I think one of the real tragedies of the war, as you might imagine, is that we literally dropped more armament on Vietnam, and that includes the Ho Chi Minh Trail, which started in Tan Hoa province. And the irony, or the bitter leftovers, are that 20% of all those weapons didn't explode, and so they lay in the ground there, where they're still, at this point, you know, still armed and dangerous. And so people will go through rice paddies, and suddenly they'll step on a mine, or they'll step on a bomb. And, you know, each year they lose probably 700 to 1,000 people from armament that's still in the ground there. America's paid a lot of money to be able to remove them, but at the rate we're going, it'll still be another 100 years before we get them all out, and some of them will never get out. So, you know, it's kind of, to me, to be able to go back and share some of our concern and let people know that, you know, we too didn't intend this, and, you know, we want to make it better as best we can. And so the wheelchairs in some ways at least helped in that regard.
Right. So when you're back there, you obviously had an interpreter working or with your team. What were some of the questions that the Vietnamese asked you?
You know, they were, first of all, surprised because there were two of us who were veterans, an older gentleman that I've come to know now, obviously Peter, and myself. We served in different areas. And basically, they wanted to know what our feelings were about the war and how we, you know, what we feel today. And the bottom line is, as we had this opportunity to converse with one another, you know, we realized for each of us. We were young men, and they were young men and women, and they were following what they were asked to do by their government. And in our case, you know, it was my responsibility to do my duty, and Peter's responsibility to do his duty. And likewise, these young people were just following what they thought was in the best interest of Vietnam at the time. So having had the opportunity to really share and understand that, it was eye-opening. You know, we do what we're told to do when we're young, and that's kind of it. It's just, it's an obligation, it's a duty, and it's a responsibility.
Right. Let me reintroduce my guest is Ray Anderson. He served in the Vietnam War as a journalist. How was it for your son? What did your son experience seeing you going back there or going back there with you? What did he experience? What was that conversation like?
Well, we spent a week in San Juan Province delivering wheelchairs. And then we spent an additional week in Saigon because what I wanted to do is I wanted to take him down and I wanted to show him exactly where I served, you know, the places I had to go, the things I had to do, and get him to see Saigon and to see South Vietnam and how it's changed in those years since we were there 50 years ago. That's a long time. I mean, it's a half a century.
Sure.
And what he found and what he was surprised by is, first of all, the wealth that now exists in Saigon, which was not there before. We stayed at a hotel because I had a Vietnamese friend here who introduced me to the manager of a Majestic Hotel, which was one of the places where the American State Department would live when they were in Vietnam. And it was a three-story building. And at the time I was there 50 years ago, there were no buildings in Saigon that were over 10 stories maybe. Today there are 100-story buildings.
Wow.
In Saigon. It's just absolutely mind-boggling. So from that perspective, he got to see where I served. We took riverboats through the tunnels where sometimes we were able to see the Vietnamese and how they buried themselves and how, you know, they would just flat disappear. And we learned more about the tunnel system, which at the time we were victims of, but they had built these tunnels over the time of the French, et cetera, you know, and had literally underground villages where they could be safe. So it was a fascinating experience, and he was very grateful that he had this chance to spend the time with me.
You said you had to raise the money, your team had to raise the money, and that was to pay for everyone to go over there to hand out these wheelchairs. How did you raise the funds?
My church, I raise it online. I raise it through Facebook. Again, you know, I raised about $15,000. Each one of these containers, the wheelchairs are $80 each. And so there's 550. So, you know, a container is about $45,000. So it takes a team effort to get them all there. And that's why we had this team of 10 people, all of whom had gathered some money from friends and locations, et cetera. So I've become accustomed to that because this is the fifth time we've delivered wheelchairs to different locations. So it's just a matter of asking people for their help. And, you know, I believe in the cause, and there's 23 million people in the world that are non-mobile and need wheelchairs. So for me to be able to go back to Vietnam was just really a chance. As I like to say, instead of having to give them hell, I could give them healing.
Nice. Are there plans for a future trip somewhere else to spread wheelchairs in your future?
I probably, if I could, I would go back to Vietnam again. I thought it was just a remarkable experience to be able to share that. And because, you know, the irony, Lillian, is you develop connections with the country. You know, I mean, it was, I'd forgotten how beautiful Vietnam was and the warmth in the heart of the people. It was just really uplifting. And I think if I did it again, I would probably go back there.
A few years back, I did a series on the Vietnam War. It was really more the soundtrack of the Vietnam War. And I asked several veterans at that time, what was their song they were listening to and that brings back memories for them? I'm wondering if you could answer the same question.
Lay, lady, lay upon your big bass bed. You know, that was Bob Dylan.
Right.
So in the Four Seasons and the Temptations, you know, those were things that I listened to and I remember. But that song by Bob Dylan is the primary one that I remember.
Ray, thank you so much for sharing your story and for serving, giving back to those less fortunate at this point. It's been great speaking with you.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. I enjoy your show.
Lay, lady, lay. Lay across my big breast, baby.
To learn more about Ray Anderson, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles and click on today's show. Up next, Sherina Wad shares one company who is helping Habitat for Humanity in Riverside and in turn supporting our veterans.
In recognition of Veterans Day, Habitat for Humanity Riverside received a donation of $30,000 from Amazon to support veteran families in Riverside. The donation will go towards the construction of 4 new homes, 2 of which will be for new veteran homeowners. Amazon associates volunteered at the build site, painting and installing flooring in 2 of the homes last week. Amazon says they're invested in providing employment opportunities for veterans through professional development tools, skills training opportunities, and programs for military veterans and their spouses. In 2016, Amazon pledged to hire 25,000 veterans and military spouses by 2021. Now there are more than 40,000 veterans and military spouses working across the company. Matt Friedlander, Habitat for Humanity Riverside's Director of Resource Development and Marketing, says that Amazon's donation will help provide a safe place for veteran families to grow. Habitat for Humanity Riverside is dedicated to eliminating substandard housing locally. In addition to this project, Habitat for Humanity Riverside will soon be building a community of 26 single-family homes in partnership with California Department of Veterans Affairs, the Economic Development Agency of Riverside County, and the City of Jurupa Valley, dedicated to veterans, active duty, and families of the fallen. For more information about the work Habitat for Humanity Riverside is doing for veterans, visit habitatriverside.org/programs/veterans. For Lifestyles, I'm Sherina Wad.
Over the years, I have interviewed many veterans, and I've asked them what Veterans Day means to them, and often it means something different to each of them. I'd like to share their thoughts. First is Ray Anderson.
Today, you know, we have such a divided culture and we have such a difficult time getting to see one another. And, you know, as a veteran, I so appreciate the sacrifices that young men make, and they do it voluntarily, you know, and never knowing if they'll come back or not. And I still to this day remember the look on my mother's face, who had to survive World War II in Germany and, you know, lost her mother and everything, and then seeing me go, you know, the pain expression on her face is something that will never leave me. So, you know, that sense of sacrifice that we as young people make, you know, affects everybody. And my feeling here on Veterans Day is that we need to honor those people who've made sacrifices and gave their life so that we could have what we have here today. And it's just... I'm incredibly honored to have served in that capacity and, more importantly, to have survived and been able to give back all these years.
Yolanda Crow, Navy.
For me, it's a reminder of looking at our past, those who were very courageous to pave the way for me to serve today, and a reminder of how honorable, empowering, and what we're doing as men and women in arms from our left to our right to in combat. So it's really a reminder of the sacrifice, the blood shed, and our tomorrow.
Frank Donahue, Navy.
Well, that's kind of a hard one, because my time in the military was an extremely positive experience. But when I think of Veterans Day, I think of my friends who served also in Vietnam era, and they had to go to Vietnam. I didn't. And I think of, you know, what they went through in Vietnam. The founder of the Field of Honor, Marietta, is Bob Bryant. He's my friend. Bob is an Air Force veteran who served in Vietnam. Those are the people that I think of on Veterans Day. I don't think about my service. My service was a pleasure. I think about those people who made the sacrifices.
Irma Cooper, Army.
as a veteran to serve and give to this country, it means so much because I know I gave my very best. And as a female, I think it's important for my children, which are both boys, to understand that their mother was able to serve in the military and do a very good job. And everyone can serve in some form in the military.
Retired Lieutenant Colonel Gordon Fawcett.
Means a lot to me. I served in Germany in the Fulda Gap, in a tank battalion for over 3 years, and then Korea on the DMZ, and then I served in a tank battalion in the 173rd Airborne Brigade in Vietnam, and I've seen a lot of my friends work and do what I did and dedicated our time and lives and everything to it. But I think the big driver that reminds me of this, and it really hits me on Memorial Day, is that during my career after Vietnam, I was on ROTC duty and a few other things. I was a survivor's assistance officer for over 23 cases of young men who were killed in action. And they're on the Vietnam Wall. And that brings back a lot of memories. And so I feel that I'm obligated to continue to take care of them and their families in memory, and that's where I come from. And my message was and is that, hey, you know, we have all these freedoms and rights, but we have an obligation to step up to protect those freedoms and rights, and we need to remember that. And that's the message I would try to give the young people when I talk to them.
That's our show for this week. To hear any of our past shows, visit our website at kvcrnews.org/lifestyles. You can also listen to Lifestyles on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Play Music. Search for Lifestyles with Lillian Vasquez on your streaming service and take this show on the go. Thanks to all who helped to make this show possible, including Sharina Wadd, David Fleming, Navy, Sean Houlihan, Andrew Caravella, and executive producer Rick Dulock. Our theme music is provided by Ethan Bortnick. And a final acknowledgement to all the women and men who served our great country. Thank you. Join me next week at the same time for Lifestyles with me, Lillian Vasquez. Bye for now.